Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Hi, I'm Zach Babbo, the multimedia manager for Inside Lacrosse. Last season, a lot of lacrosse world was exposed to Harlem lacrosse and leadership through their prominent placement in an ad campaign for Dick's Sports that ran during many televised lacrosse games. The program brings the sport to urban environments where it doesn't often reach. It started in 2011 at Frederick Douglass Academy in Harlem, New York, and the organization has since expanded to place boys and girls programs in 7 schools in Harlem, and in the past few years, it's also spread to reach other cities and states, starting chapters in Boston, Philadelphia, and Baltimore. And now they just made the jump out west, adding a new chapter in Los Angeles. During last month's LaxCon weekend, I had the chance to sit and talk about Harlem Lacrosse's mission, model, and growth with Chief Advancement Officer Joel Sensor. I've known Joel casually for a while, as the lacrosse world is small and we often run into each other at big events while he covered the sport for U.S. Lacrosse. And about a year ago, I got the opportunity to catch up with him and Senior Program Director Owen Van Arsdale at Frederick Douglass Academy and see the program and players in action. The way they use lacrosse as a tool for advancement and enrichment is impressive, and the perspective they lend to what participating in this sport can mean for some of these kids is affirming and inspiring. So enjoy my conversation with Joel, and if you'd like to learn more about Harlem Lacrosse or contribute to their cause, go to harlemlacrosse.org. How's everybody doing today? My name is Zach Babbo. I'm the multimedia manager here at Inside Lacrosse. Today I have the pleasure of sitting with Joel Sensor, the Chief Programming Officer for Harlem Lacrosse, formerly Harlem Lacrosse and Leadership. Joel, we can start there. So when did the name change happen? And I guess, was there any particular kind of push behind that?
Yeah, the name change happened actually in September. We were, obviously, we came out of Harlem originally, hence the name Harlem Lacrosse and Leadership. And the whole point of having the "and" leadership was that we were trying to connotate that we're not a lacrosse program at our heart. We're a middle school intervention program, and that lacrosse is really just the hook for increased outcomes for underserved students in a variety of different ways. And we thought that Harlem Lacrosse at a certain point had meant something, and people knew that it was a full kind of comprehensive youth service organization and not just about lacrosse. So we thought Harlem Lacrosse kind of incorporated all that, but we were moving to new cities. We were in Baltimore, we were in Boston, we're moving to Philadelphia this coming year. And now obviously with the big announcement that we're moving to Los Angeles, it was just hard. It was then Harlem Lacrosse and Leadership. How do we put that across multiple cities? We tried Baltimore City Lacrosse and Leadership for a little bit. And we just thought it just made sense and was neater to say Harlem Lacrosse Baltimore, Harlem Lacrosse Philadelphia, Harlem Lacrosse Los Angeles. I know there was some infighting. I'm trying to avoid, all the Baltimore City Lacrosse and Leadership lovers who are still have their BCLL logos. But no, I think it's just been a cleaner, neater way to kind of describe who we are and what we do.
So you guys really have grown pretty expansively. I mean, from a couple of, from effectively one program in Harlem to multiple schools in Harlem to now many different cities, I guess. How do you guys track that kind of expansion? I mean, what beyond even the growth in Harlem alone, the way you've been able to expand to other cities, what kind of allows Harlem Lacrosse to go to another city? What makes another city attractive? Or what do you need on the ground maybe to help build into something?
Right. So I guess just to explain Harlem Lacrosse, our structure is so that we stick a full-time staff member to work in a school, and their only job is to coach lacrosse. Oftentimes they're there from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., But then they start building structures that make it not about lacrosse. So they become part of the fabric of the school that they're in, and then they have daily study halls. And then they make their lacrosse teams that they built about other things other than lacrosse and just use that lacrosse as the carrot to do that. And I think that's a pretty expensive model, right, to get former college lacrosse. We want to get quality people who can do this work and be passionate about it for long periods of time. And to do that is kind of an expensive model, and we pay them like teachers. So we've been just really, really lucky. I think that a lot of people have seen kind of the power of sport and the power of having a committed, passionate adult and role model in people's life, and then want it for their own city. So we're kind of, for us to move to a new city or to be part of it, we need to see that there's real funding available where we can create an ecosystem where if we give a kid a stick in sixth grade, we can fund them to be in the program, hopefully for their entire, you know, until they get access to college. So that's kind of what we think about when we think of new cities, and obviously the funding of having, you know, starting a new program, a new boys program or a new girls program costs $75,000. So, but, you know, if we wanted to create that for 10 years, then we're talking about getting almost $1 million worth of funding. So that's kind of the driving force in terms of us being able to grow and being able to spread.
You know, one of the things that's always kind of limited lacrosse's growth in some urban areas is on top of economics and all that stuff, is the space concerns of it. I mean, it's a big full field sport, and those kind of amenities don't often exist in urban areas. I really got a kick out of when I came up to Frederick Douglass and saw you guys in the handball court out there, kind of how well that seemed to actually work for what you're trying to do, and creative almost in some ways it was, that you had this space right next to school and you ran with that. How do you maybe solve those kind of issues in different urban environments of, you know, where the kids practice, where you can go play games, that kind of stuff?
I mean, I think the lack of space in New York has been a huge advantage to us. I'd be remiss to say, you know, if we're an outcomes organization, we care about the long-term outcomes of our students. If you look at a Division I lacrosse roster, those kids, you know, a lot of them are coming from Canada or coming from a completely unique way of playing lacrosse that has nothing to do with playing on a full expansive field. I think when I started at Harlem Lacrosse, I think a lot of people haven't been creative about thinking about how to teach in these urban environments. I just started going to box practices. Honestly, I mean, give 3D lacrosse a lot of credit. They kind of created this template where I was going to 3D practices, and I was seeing how they were teaching, and I was just kind of imposing that on the small spaces in Harlem. And that has been absolutely critical to our growth as a program in terms of kids know when they're not good, and how, you know, they know when they're not improving. But that kind of being able to touch the ball all the time in the small space, to be able to have action all the time in the small space, to be able to have steady improvement all the time in that small space, has been absolutely critical to the kids buying in, to the kids being willing to do the educational stuff, to the kids being willing to, play, to continue to want to just be involved with lacrosse as something that they take pride in and kind of, you know, dominates who they are and what how they want to represent themselves. I think that small space has been critical for us. And I think one of our worries in moving to Boston and Philadelphia and Baltimore and now LA is that there is a lot of space. And it's like, wait, we now, like, what are we going to do with all this space? Like, can we cut it in five? Can we cut it in six? Like, can we get box goals? Like, what? So I love the small spaces of urban environments, and I think of it as a positive and not a negative.
You know, that makes a lot of sense because actually over IMLCA weekend, we talked to a lot of coaches, and a handful of coaches we talked to were talking about trying to, you know, ways to get more people involved, to grow the game, to grow the skill level, particularly at younger levels. And one of them was that idea of, you know, the USA hockey model, the Belgian soccer model of small fields and more touches and more kids involved. And that, you know, that was definitely what I saw too when I came up to your practice. It was just such an energy to it. You know, their kids are always moving. They were always participating. You know, it's... What's that like to be, you know, I saw you come out and coach a little bit, I think even in that practice, what's it like to kind of be amongst that where everybody's kind of flowing around, there seems to be a lot of energy, a lot of excitement, the kids really seem to respond well to the practice environment. I mean, how do you guys feed off of that maybe to kind of keep everything going?
Yeah, it gives us life. I mean, it's not easy to work in a school environment all year, every day. I think it just gives us a lot of life to be able to... I mean, if practice isn't fun, then you're doing something wrong, right? And I think, like, that life is what gives us that. So having so much fun at that practice, it gives us the power to kind of really change lives, because then the kid is saying, oh, I'll do 2 hours of tutoring after school because, you know, practice is so fun and I get to cross-check kids and I get to, you know, and it's all shooting and it's all offense all the time and it's all, you know, quality touches all the time. And they're willing to do whatever they can to kind of keep investing in that. So I think that energy is what gives the whole program life.
You know, really, at the essence of Harlem Lacrosse, that whole idea of kind of betterment, of helping these kids achieve academically, even before athletically, it's such a great kind of model of a program. And the way you guys embed yourself in schools, what kind of interaction do you have with the rest of that school community in terms of teachers, in terms of administrators, you know, when they maybe see... the way that kids who
are involved in your program then bring maybe a different energy or attention to their own classrooms or things like that.
Yeah, they love it. I mean, I'm not going to say we've never had a problem with a specific teacher or a specific kid or a specific administrator. But I think, honestly, like, I've seen schools transform their whole culture around what we're doing and the idea that what kids really need is something to be good at and something to be confident about and something to build at. Kids don't need to be screamed at. Not to say they don't, a lot of them want discipline and want structure, but what they, to be able to even infiltrate that in any way, they need to believe in themselves and to be part of something that they like. And I think schools love the fact that, you know, we cannot be teachers. We can be in the schools full time and we can come into a classroom and tell a kid, like, what is going on? And we can play a role that is hard for a teacher to play. So, you know, you hear about some of our program directors are former teachers and they just love the job because they love the idea that, like, as a teacher, you're limited. Like, you got to teach 2 + 2 = 4. And if a kid doesn't get it, like, it's hard to work around that. You know, we have infinite flexibility because we have what the kids like and what they want, and we're able to kind of build from that.
So obviously, you know, you mentioned before the big kind of news for you guys is expansion to multiple cities, and one of those cities being you're going, this whole thing's moving west now, going out towards LA. You know, what, I guess, how'd that come about, and you know, what should we expect to see as Harlem kind of digs into the LA community?
Right, so James Dodonna was our longtime executive director, and he was actually employee number 2, and he's actually an English PhD, and it was time for him to go back to school, and kind of he was about to finish his dissertation, and it was time for him to, I think, follow what he went to school for 7 years to do in the first place. He was just writing grants for us and kind of got picked up in all the momentum and the swing, and he did an unbelievable job building us from a small little startup on a handball court to a kind of a national organization. But, you know, saying that, we were looking for a new leader and someone who could really, like, make the program something that is sustainable and something that is going to have a lasting impact, hopefully, for many, many, many years. And we came on Mike Levin. You know, I think anyone who's met Mike would say he's salt of the earth. He was the executive director at Metro Lacrosse in Boston for a few years, and then he moved out west with his wife and started City Lacrosse, which is in Los Angeles. And, you know, I think based mostly out of – I'm still learning the larger geography of L.A., but it's South Central and Compton neighborhoods, and has done a tremendous job of building that program in a very short amount of time, and just clearly has leadership skills and personality that we want to believe in and lead. And we thought he would be the perfect person to kind of help, you know, build Harlem Lacrosse and what we want to build it into now, which is a full-scale youth service organization that really impacts lots of lives and lots of cities. So in talking with him, it was more like the LA expansion also came with adopting Mike Levin and his wonderful board that he's been able to build out in City Lacrosse. And, you know, it's in the merger, it's going to meet halfway, right? Is that he's going to adopt Harlem Lacrosse's in-school approach. And we're going to hopefully get a lot benefits out of all the great things that they've been doing there and the relationships that they've been built. So, it will likely be called Harlem Lacrosse Los Angeles. As I mentioned earlier, I want no part in these inner city wars over naming rights. So I'll just keep my head low. But so that's kind of how the whole thing came about, and we're super excited. The idea to impact kids in multiple coasts. Impact nearly 1,000 kids probably in a year or two through lacrosse is something we don't take lightly, and it's a big deal. And in, you know, everything I hear about lacrosse is like, oh, popular, like, you know, lack of, like, you know, the it's plateaued. People aren't playing as much in cities, and I think there's the real proof is in the pudding is that, like, people, like, we're in cities, we can't give out enough lacrosse sticks. Like, everybody wants to play lacrosse. Everyone wants to be a part of our program. And really, it's just about creating, getting good quality coaches who the in you know, who can be passionate about it and can follow it and pursue this. And that's really the only proof in the pudding. If you want to, if you want this game to grow in the inner cities, like, then you're gonna, we're gonna need to invest in it in a certain way and invest in coaches and people to be involved in it in a real way.
You know, in that kind of global sense with the sport, I mean, with the talks of people being frustrated about whether it's growing or not, how it's growing, can it reach out to more people, can it democratize more, you know, hit more demographics, you know, I guess how important do you think it is maybe that some of these initiatives happen, that maybe what they could mean for the sport in 10 years in terms of more exposure of the sport in more areas where it otherwise wouldn't be, and maybe more people being able to matriculate to do different levels of competition, different levels of academia, and change a little bit of that complexion as well of you know, what we think of maybe when we think of a college lacrosse player and what a lacrosse player may be and all those kind of things.
I mean, I hope so. I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't say that, like, I got into one of the best schools in America and got you know, have made amazing friends and been able to benefit massively from the network that lacrosse provides. And I think anyone who plays it, for the most part, will tell you that the network that they create in lacrosse has been incredibly beneficial for them in their professional careers and their social lives and throughout a number of different ways. And, you know, I think it's a real shame to kind of keep those networks involved with people who all look the same or who all come from the same walks of life. I think that's almost tragic, and I think we have a real right to do something about it. So I'm hopeful that things are changing. I feel like they do. I'd be remiss not to mention that the lacrosse community has been absolutely supportive throughout this whole thing. You know, towns pay for our buses, club teams pay, you know, 3D, Tri-State, Predators. The list kind of goes on of club teams who are willing to see that there's value in what we do, and just towns who will host our kids to stay overnight with their families and break bread and play lacrosse. I mean, it's been overarching the amount of support and belief that the lacrosse community has in us, and I think people would agree for the most part that they want these networks open as well. So, and the independent school community. Sorry, if I'm in the spirit of shout outs, then I'm missing a number of people. So.
You know, I guess how important was that kind of stuff to what you guys are trying to do in terms of growing these programs? That, you know, I tagged along with Owen Van Arsdale and his Frederick Douglass team as they went out to play in the tournament in Brooklyn. I know you guys have talked about, you know, the bus, as you were just mentioned, the bus trips you'll go do to go play in other towns and cities, of finding those other organizations that want to be a part of this, that want to help out, that, you know, to help. So you guys aren't just playing on a handball court in Harlem and don't have other, you know, you have other places to go and let the kids compete and do all those kind of things.
Yeah, it's absolutely critical. I mean, look, we try to be practice first organization. I think we don't. I'm not a big believer in games for middle school kids. Like, if they can't catch and throw, like, if they can't play the game the right way, like, what's the point of having a game? Like, what is that going to measure? Like, and are the kids, like, mature and emotionally able to handle that measurement? Like, I don't think so. So we've really kind of invested more in creating practice culture and much more in finding towns and universities and independent schools who want to partner with us. And, I mean, look, the truth is that it's a we're Harlem lacrosse. Like, we're not Harlem basketball. Like, we are opening up networks that were previously unavailable to our kids. And that's what the lacrosse connotates, right? And so I think the kids understand that and they appreciate it, and they want to be part of something broader than themselves and introduce themselves and break down walls and do all those things as well. So yeah, I think it's critically important, and we want to give our kids, we want to open their perspective and their lens to give them a broader perspective about what's out there, and you know, introduce them to things that they probably wouldn't have been introduced to otherwise. So,
you know, and so along those lines, I mean, one of the large benefits obviously that comes out of these kind of programs is kids who are able to, you know, either succeed athletically or really both succeed athletically and succeed academically, maybe open up new opportunities to them down the line, you know, as they move from high school or middle school into high school into hopefully some, you know, collegiate or whatnot. You know, I know you guys have a numerous success stories of kids who are now at, you know, high-end prep schools, are now, you know, have matriculated into college, whether they're playing lacrosse or not, are you know, maybe doing things that otherwise they may not have been inclined to do or may have had more difficulty attaining. You know, I don't expect you to have all the stats on all that stuff, but can you just speak a little bit about that, about what, you know, the long-end kind of life stuff that this has been able to help kids
right.
achieve?
Right, so we've started in 2011. Since then, we've sent 48 kids to boarding school with $15 million in scholarship offers. Hopefully that number gets to 70 by the end of this year. We have our first crop of kids are all in college. They're at... we have kids playing lacrosse at Haverford, at I have to shout out the alma mater, Bates, Colby, and then we have kids who are matriculated as students at Connecticut College, at Tufts, at Gettysburg, at West Point, at UVA. I'm forgetting a fair amount of them too, but I think, and that's all great, and we're really happy and proud of that work that we've done. But we started in a special education classroom. We started with a special education class, a teacher who couldn't control his classroom. And he had 10 kids, and he had 11 kids, and the story is he brought out 10 sticks and had one ball, and they threw the ball over the parking lot on their first practice. So we work in, for the most part, city public schools, and we deal with a wide range of kids at various ends of the spectrum, and not every kid is going to be able to go to college to play lacrosse. Not every kid is going to be maybe or you know or sorry I don't mean not go to college he's not going to have the capacity to he's not going to there's going to be too many things in his way probably to go to Harvard, but we would love, you know, we want to give the same opportunities to the kids who have serious learning disorders or who had other issues in their lives, whether it's figuring out how they can go to community college or setting them up with a trade. We are really trying to reach all of our kids in the right way and meet them where they are. So it's not just going to be about the high-end, high-flyer kids. Like, we're really committed to figuring out how can we get the best outcomes for every single kid and how are we going to do that. And I think... you know, we have funding to start our first high school program. We've been a middle school program. We're going to start our first high school program in the coming, starting next September. And that's going to be a 9-12. And it's going to be the same kind of, you know, hopefully we can play Greenwich and Manhasset and New Canaan. You guys can call me whenever and we can set up a game. And we're trying to get to your guys' level. But at the same time, it's going to also be really focused on, you know, long-term outcomes of the kids and figuring out what's the best situation for each one. And whether it's going to, you know, Stony Brook to play lacrosse, or whether it's to go to Harvard to be a biomedical engineer, or whether it's to learn how to be a blacksmith, or to, you know, go do a year and figure out how to be a computer programmer. Or, you know, we're really trying to find the best outcome for each kid and meet them where they are.
You know, that's such a refreshing perspective, really, in the sport now, because, you know, particularly with recruiting, with everything, it seems that everybody's so focused on the singularity of the outcome of, you know, does a kid who's playing at the youth level or at the high school level now, does he get into a college program, get a scholarship? And the way that you guys have approached it of, you know, yes, we would love to attain those kind of high things, but it can be as much as getting a kid to succeed better academically, getting a kid to behave better in school, getting a kid to get to college generally, whether he's playing or not, getting a kid to get a better high school opportunity, getting kids to have a little more self-confidence in himself. It's a very refreshing thing, I think, at this day and age. A lot of people got exposed to Harlem lacrosse in the past year with the Dick's Sporting Goods ad campaign that was focusing on you guys. You know, I know you. There's been a lot of story a little bit about, you know, just how that all interacted with you guys, but I'm just curious, you know, what were some maybe the largest gains or impacts you saw from that in terms of, you know, exposure of the program? Did it lead to more people wanting to find out about you? Did it lead to increase in maybe funding or anything? You can guess it probably did some things for some of the kids, at least, that were involved in those commercials. But beyond that, what did it maybe do for the program?
Yeah, it was the biggest thing that ever happened in our program history. I mean, to be on ESPN every other day, you just can't take that for granted. You know, the amount of people who are like, oh, Harlem Lacrosse, like, oh, you guys run that commercial, right? Like, it's like, the number is exponential. I mean, you said it, like, we went from a startup we had like 4 or 5 programs to being now a national brand with almost, we're going to have 25 employees by the end of September. Around then, that doesn't happen without, you know, being publicized for the work that we do. And obviously, the work that Dick's did, what I think was most important about it was that it really shined a light on us not being a lacrosse organization. It really shined a light to lots of people that this is an organization that uses sport to develop our youth. And that introduced us to a massive number of partners and interested people who are like, we want to be really involved in this, and we don't want anything else other than to feel really good about helping kids who deserve the same opportunities that every other kid has. So, yeah, I mean, it was transformative, and we feel really blessed and lucky to have had Dick's Sporting Goods and the American Dotties and everyone else in between in our lives. So.
And, I guess just a little quick backstory or bio for you. I'd love to hear just, you know, kind of how you got involved in the Harlem Lacrosse program. Yeah. And also, you know, you mentioned before throughout the alma mater, Haverford, you know, where do your lacrosse roots come from?
Sure. I was, I guess we'll start with the roots and then we'll get back. I was actually really a basketball player when I was in middle school and at the very beginning of high school. And I was a pretty good basketball player, and I was, but the high school I went to is a big high school in Northern Virginia, and there were two kids. One went on to be a Rhodes Scholar and drafted in the NFL, actually went to Brown, and one went to be the Patriot League Player of the Year at Lehigh in basketball, and I was just never going to play in that backcourt, and I could see, I was just like a head case, and there was just everything else in between. So I started being like, okay, well, I'm okay at lacrosse. Like, let's focus on that. And I fell in love with the sport, and I realized that, you know, I didn't, to get where I needed to be, I started really like watching film. And so I fell in love with like the broader scope of what lacrosse was. So like Corey Harn, and these are like people, I don't even know. Corey Harn was a long stick middie at Hopkins in 2004. I would watch him and John Glatzel at Syracuse. I would watch these films till they broke. And I just really became, my junior and senior year, I just became obsessed and a total wax rat, just in the hopes of getting better. And then I played at Haverford for Mike Murphy, who's now the coach at Penn. And he was, he was really transformative for me in a lot of ways in terms of just, you know, my love of the sport grew. And he really taught me about structure and being responsible and being held accountable to other people and everything else in between. And it is, you know, I'm thankful for that to this day. I think, beyond that, at Harlem Lacrosse, I was writing for Lacrosse Magazine actually, and I was a grant writer, for a medical services company. And my wife got a great job. My now wife got a great job in New York. And at the time at Harlem Lacrosse, I saw the job offering for the program director, and I just didn't think that there were many people who, at the time, Harlem Lacrosse was a lot smaller, and you had to be able to do a lot more things. So I didn't know how many other people in the lacrosse community had serious grant writing experience mixed with coaching experience. So I got involved, and it was I didn't have the first clue what I was doing. If nothing else, I just worked really, really hard and just tried to figure things out and do it the best I can, and got really lucky along the way, and still aren't perfect, but just love it enough, and it gives me life every day. So I feel really blessed to be able to do what I do.
So if anybody listening to this, would like to find out a little bit more about Harlem Lacrosse, find out, you know, the new ventures you guys going, maybe look into helping fund you guys at all, where could we send them to go kind of follow along your story here?
Yeah, come to our website, harlemlacrosse.org. You can always, I'll blow up our new CEO, Mike Levin. You can always, if you have a serious funding opportunity, you can email him at coachmike@harlemlacrosse.org. And you can always email me at joel@harlemlacrosse.org. But we always love finding like-minded people who are invested in growing the game the right way. And you know, we're whatever our story is and wherever it's going, we feel happy to be a part of the general lacrosse community and to have so much support behind it. So,
well, like I said before, I feel very lucky. I got to come see you guys up at in Harlem. I'm curious to see what you guys bring, you know, have going down here in Baltimore. And my wife's from L.A., so hopefully maybe next time I'm out in L.A., I'll be able to see what you guys have going on in L.A. And, you know, it's just great, I think, what you guys have been able to do, expanding across to many different platforms. And really, best of luck to you guys as you know, keep kind of getting this mission out there and letting Harlem Lacrosse, you know, spread as far as it can go.
Thank you for having me today, Zach. We just moved to L.A. mostly so I could avoid the New York winters, I say. No, I'm just kidding. We're excited too, and thankful for all Inside Lacrosse does for the game. I can't tell you how many times I see program directors just leave their Inside Lacrosse tabs up, so they can't get enough of the game either. So even, you know, wherever it's getting played, the kids want to read it, and we're certainly happy to be involved in this broader thing. So thank you.
Yeah, well, stories like yours are the ones fun to tell. So thanks, y'all. Okay.